The Why Me Project, an exclusive presentation of Faith Strong Today.
Episode number
175.
You are correctamundo.
Yes.
And I want to say this. It's been a long time since we've really had this opportunity. And it was to have people reach out to us and say, you need to get so-and-so on the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And so Lori had sent us a message that had said, I have followed the life of Jessica. She has an amazing story. Any chance you could reach out to get her on the show?
And we took the challenge.
Yeah. So we've been trying to work on this for the last little while. And thank you to quarantining and everything else. People's lives just aren't as busy.
Yeah. I feel like some people might have really struggled in 2020. I think for our guests, the list has been so incredible. Thanks to people taking a bit more time to slow down and be at home.
So our guest for this week, she is an actor, an author, an advocate. Jessica Furmanek, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
So far, so good. Give us a half hour. You might think differently.
We'll see how it goes.
Yeah.
Jessica, we'd like to ask this skill testing question because we never know how it's going to go. Who are you and where did you come from?
Well, it came from my mom and my dad. But I was born at Johns Hopkins Hospital in Baltimore, Maryland, which is a wonderful city that I love. And I grew up by the age of four. I already had my first live radio performance as a singer, and I worked in entertainment my whole life. But I also do write. I author books. I have a TV pilot in the works, and in my spare time, I advocate for survivors of human trafficking.
Wow. Well, we get to dive into all of that hopefully coming up. But did you then grow up and live in Baltimore your whole life?
I did. I lived there till I was 20. And then I was getting offers in L.A., and then there was the option of New York. But I really don't like anything cold. So I was like, sure, I'll work in L.A., done. So I just headed west. And I have been in New York. I was there for like a year working on a couple of films. And I've worked in Atlanta for a year. But my home base is Los Angeles, where the sun shines.
Nice. Don't come here because it gets cold.
Yeah, no, don't worry. I won't.
So what was it about the entertainment industry? What was it about, you just being in the spotlight that you crave so much?
You know, I actually don't crave the spotlight. I have an aversion to fame. I'm introverted. When I was younger, in my early 20s, it was a struggle for me if I had a successful theater show and people would come up to me in Hollywood when I was trying to eat lunch, you know, that it used to be really overwhelming to me. And I learned to understand that we are all brothers and sisters and cousins and everyone is on my side and it's okay to talk strangers. but I don't crave it. I'm the opposite. I crave privacy and I'm very reserved.
Nice.
It's painful to me. But the reason that fundamentally what I am created to be is a storyteller. And so all I ever did from the time that I could communicate words through movement or writing or speaking or singing or dancing, I just did so. I just found stories. I wrote stories. I participated in others' stories as an actor. And I just want to convey inspired thought that either makes you laugh or cry so that you can tap into the deeper feelings that you might be experiencing in life.
Where does that desire to tell stories come from? Was it something that was always there?
Yes. I mean, like I was already performing at the age of four, training in dance, singing, and, you know, soon after, like writing, trying to write. Mm-hmm. I barely knew how to write. And so for me, it's like an innate thing from birth. So I know a lot of my friends I talk to over the years, and they're like, they get to high school, they get to college, they're trying to figure out what they want to be. I never experienced that. I always knew this is what I am purposed to do, and I always did it from the time I could. And so while I've had some very low valleys and some good mountains as well, it's been a rough ride. I have always reverted back to it in the end, even after taking breaks from it. So I can't really relate to like finding myself or finding my purpose. It was always quite clear to me.
So then knowing your purpose, what were you still goal-oriented? Was there still things that you wanted to accomplish? I mean, or was it just as long as you were doing something that would entertain, you were okay?
Well, for me, I had experienced compounded trauma. So from a very early age, I experienced childhood abuse. It was abuse throughout into adulthood, and then I survived exploitation, which is a whole nother conversation. And then at the age of 30, I had cancer, and my marriage didn't survive the extreme weight of me being ill for 3 years and in and out of hospital. So, you know, abuse, exploitation, cancer, divorce, these are real, like a person wouldn't want to have one of those things happen, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like age 30 and I'm already, I already have compounded trauma. I don't know if you guys are familiar with the ACE score, but that's a test that they offer in the world of psychology where you sort of score how much trauma you've experienced. And so the highest score is 10, and my score is 8. So I'm very high on the chart of having experienced multiple traumas. So what happened to me is while I had the benefit of knowing, oh, this is my purpose, clear, I had a hard time functioning whatsoever after experiencing these very difficult things. And I developed PTSD and had to be very participatory in my daily mental health in order to function. So I like lost my way to the point where I couldn't even really remember at a certain point what I was here to do. And so after a particularly difficult situation and a big loss like 5 years ago, I sat down and I just started journaling. And sorry, am I rambling on?
No, you're good. No, this is the whole point of this.
If you're bored, like
no. This is where you talk, and then we ask questions and fill in the blanks after.
Okay, so I'll continue on this. You jump in when you need to.
Okay.
So I had a really particularly difficult breakup. I was in leadership at a well-known church with thousands of congregants, and I was slated to marry a staff member. So this is a very public relationship. Everybody follows you on Instagram. You know what I mean? Like, and so I had a very public breakup, and he did things that were scandalous. Right? And I don't really want to talk about it, but I think you could probably guess. So I after all of the other things that I mentioned previously, this was too much, right? Like, you know, I can't speak for people who don't go to church, but, you know, I hadn't gone to church. I went to church when I was a kid, and then I didn't for like 10 years because I was, you know, having a different life. And then I went back to church, and this was my first church boyfriend, my first Christian guy. And, you know, a lot of people, at least me, it's been shared with me, but so let me speak for myself and not a lot of people. I felt that now I'm at church and everything will be great and I'll be safe and nobody will wrong me. And that didn't happen. Mm-hmm. So I was overwhelmed because I thought, okay, I tried the world's way, and that was really bad, really, really, really bad. And then I tried the safe way, or whatever you want to call it, the right way, the good road, you know, and that was terrible. And so after that, I sat down, and I read through the book of Esther, and I started reading it over and over and over. I was, like, enthralled with her experience, and her experience wasn't great, like, every bad thing happened to her. She was orphaned. Nobody wants that. That is horrible. And luckily, she had an amazing uncle. And then throughout her life, after being orphaned, she sort of stepped into situations that she probably didn't, I mean, she definitely didn't ask for. And they were big situations that probably felt, I would have felt overwhelmed myself if I was a young girl. So she, what I noticed in her story is that she sort of allowed her uncle to advise her, and she didn't push back. She just listened, and she just took the advice, right? And then there was another servant at the palace named Haggai, and I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, sorry. And he advised her when she was in the position of being chosen as the queen, and I don't pretend that that was a good experience for her or a bad experience for her. We weren't there. It could have been horrifying. I don't know. Could have been wonderful. I don't really know. But she did it, and she did it well, and that, and I took something from that because I was like, wow, I have really difficult experiences happening to me that I couldn't have predicted, and I didn't want, and I wanted people to, I wanted things to go differently, you know. I wanted to belong to this man, and I wanted that to be my life, and I wanted my security, and everything got deleted, and unexpectedly, and I had to, I was found myself on a road that was not the one I wrote, right, not the story I wrote. And I thought, well, I could allow it to happen. I could allow it to unfold. I could follow some guidance from God, from my prayers and meditations, from mentors, from people I respect, from authors that I admire that are saying something that's helpful to me. And I did that. I dove in and I journaled everything that I thought of, everything that all my experiences, all the healthy choices I made throughout that year. I mean, it was a lot of choices. It was body, mind choices, taking breaks, studying, getting in shape, eating right, but also addressing the mental and emotional health and money and finances. And it took a whole year I sat with the Book of Esther. And at the end of it, I had this really clear, like, 12 steps of what got me from utterly lost to remembering, oh, you have a purpose, Jessica. You're a storyteller. You have these talents. You've completely forgotten them. You've been totally derailed. Remember who you are. And I did. I remembered who I was at the end of a full year. So I took it. I edited it for a couple of years. I did a couple of focus groups with other survivors of trauma. And I found this amazing publisher who I adore, Morgan James Publishing, my favorite people in the world. And they immediately gave me an agreement for my book, contract for the book. First people I met with. When does that ever happen?
Yeah, no kidding.
Right. I love when I'm on target. You know, you just, everything is easy flowing. And I appreciate that since prior things in my life have been so heavy and hard and not easy. So I wrote that book, and I would do a lot of other work other than the book. But the book for me is a really huge part of my heart right now because I feel like my hurt has value if it allows another man or woman to return to their purpose or find a way to get back on target or get steady again after a loss and trauma and unexpected disappointment. So it makes my pain have, like, worth and value, so it's not for nothing. That means something to me. Like, I'm tearing up right now, you can probably tell. It means something to me. And the book, I have actually totally dedicated the proceeds to survivors of exploitation and trafficking, so I don't even keep it. It's just all going into a benefit.
Why then dedicate the money towards that? Is there a reasoning then behind that?
Johnny, that is such an intriguing question, and no one ever asks me. And I'm so kind of excited that you did. It was a weird, like, supernatural experience. I didn't want to. This has happened to me more than once in life where I pray, I meditate, and I get sort of a intuition, you know, sign from God, word from God, whatever language you prefer, to do something, and I don't always like the suggestion that comes to my mind. And this time, it was a great sacrifice. It, you know, I'm working hard. I'm not the richest girl in the world. And I'm thinking, you know, I worked all these years on this book. This is going to be great, residual income. And I felt like you should give this book away. And I was like, oh, no, 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 Jesus, no, shh. I was like, what are you talking about? Just hush, shut that down. No. But I sat with it for weeks and months, and this is what I kept envisioning. I have several more books in me, and my publisher's ready for that, right? And I felt like, so I have contributed to a couple of books before, a few publications. I've written a lot, but actual books and publications I've contributed to with other doctors, but I was never the solo writer, and this was my first solo book, no one else attached. And I felt like God was saying, if you will just give this first one, I have so much more for you after this, but could you just give it away? And I was like, oh, okay, fine, I'll give it away. And it kind of felt like, and I'm not, I don't want to get into a discussion about tithing and the rights and wrongs of it, but to me, you know, it reminded me of tithing, and it felt like, you just want like this first to bless my work, and then we'll take it from there. And so I did it, and my family, I don't know if everyone was happy with me. I'm sure my family was like, Jessica, yeah, you need money. Like, we've been waiting for you to make all. And I'm like, it's okay. It'll be fine. And I feel great. So I think it'll be fine. I hope it'll be fine. I'm giving it away. There's no going back now. So.
Exactly. If God asked you to do it and you're being true to his word, then it will be fine.
Yeah, that's what I believe. So I feel pretty good about it, and it's been really exciting. And we have a waiting list of survivors, and we've already had like dozens of people donate books to be mailed out when the book releases. It releases on November 10th, but you can pre-order it. So we have all these pre-orders, and it's just so encouraging to me.
You were talking about that you dealt with childhood abuse. And then you had said, and I didn't write it down, so I'm going to quote it wrong, sexual exploitation.
Yeah.
And cancer survivor. Could you expound on sexual exploitation in the sense that something that you were involved with, something that you had noticed?
For me, when I was 18 years old, I was approached by a friend who was working in the commercial sex trade. And so for me, what that looked like was nightclubs. It can look like a lot of different things, but that's what it wound up being for me. And so I worked in adult entertainment clubs at the age of 18, which is horrifying. It's horrifying at every age. And at least for me, I feel it's horrifying. And I can sort of get... And so I was in and out of that for 12 years, a big chunk of my maturing years. And I just want to be really clear on one thing. So a lot of the reason why that was something that I was easily guided to by the exploiters was because I had experienced specifically sexual abuse from like the age of 4 and by multiple people. And so, and some of them were in the church. And yeah. So what happened was, what happens in the mind of a child, and especially this happened specifically for me, was that I was groomed to believe that my identity was to please men, whatever they asked for. And so when business owners, you know, of legal businesses, offer you work that is in line with what they've all been telling you your identity is, you just say yes, because, of course, that makes sense. Right. Mm-hmm. And so it took me. So this organization based in Los Angeles called Treasures Ministry started doing outreach to clubs. The founder was a survivor, also had been exploited in clubs. And she, when she got out, she thought, I can't just leave them all there. Let me at least offer them like a phone number to call if they are stressing out and need some help. So the very first outreach she did, the very first night, was to my club. And, you know, and we're now friends all these years later. And so her name is Harmony Grillo. And so she comes to my club for like 3 years, you know, once a month or so. And her little group of women gives me just a tiny bag with like fingernail polish and lip gloss and like a little note of encouragement, like a little scripture maybe. It varied. And they were the only people that came there that didn't ask anything from me. They gave freely to me, and they didn't demand something in return. And they always looked at me like I was a nice girl, like I had value. Like, they talked to me with such honor, and no one talked to me like that. I got attached to it. I was like, well, if they think that I have value, maybe I do. It was like a novel idea for me in my 20s. And one night, it was the weirdest experience. I was literally standing on a stage in front of people in like a bikini. And it was like, I woke up and I saw everything and I thought, they don't care about me. They're not for me. This is not my identity. And it was like, prior to that moment where I snapped, I thought everything was kind of may be good or acceptable or helpful or profitable or whatever. And in that moment, everything, it was like I could see everything for what it truly was. It was a really astounding moment. That would probably be my life turn moment right there on that stage. I walked off the stage. I walked into the dressing room, and I said to my fellow dancer, I think I'm done. And so, just so you know, like, strippers say that every night that they work, because everyone wants out. Yeah. I mean, I can't say everyone wants out. I mean, I'll speak for the whole world, but a lot of people want out. So they say that every night. So she blew me off. She's like, okay, you guys say that every night, you know.
Typical Jessica.
Yeah, typical. And I never went back. I packed up. I left. I never went back to work. And it was never worked in it. It's not work. That's not the appropriate word. I was never exploited again.
Hmm.
And I wound up going to a church like a couple years later, which was the church that Harmony went to. And I was like, oh my God, what are the odds of that? The person who's doing outreach to me shows up, you know, on platform. And then so we became friends, and I'm now on the speakers bureau, and I wound up doing outreach for years to the club that I worked at. Hmm. It was amazing. I mean, it was amazing for me. It was such a healing experience for me to be able to walk back into the doors, but with my real identity, and also be able to say, hey guys, if you need help or you just want someone to talk to or you need resources, like, here I am.
How does someone who was so hurt by people in the church when you were young still be able to go back into the church and have it now being like a healed moment instead of a painful moment?
That's a loaded question.
Well, I'm just thinking so many
you
people.
You brought out all the guns.
Welcome to our show.
Yeah. Well, so many people are hurt by the church, and that's their excuse not to get close to Jesus.
Yeah. But, and you know what? I was hurt as a young child and then hurt again as a grown woman, right? So I have an intriguing approach to my relationship with God. I don't deeply enjoy, I call it big church, big Sunday service. I tend to go to big churches with like hundreds and thousands of people. And it's not my favorite moment. It's a little overwhelming to me. And the bubbly greeter thing really drives me over the edge because I'm so introverted. I'm so introverted. I sit in the back row. And it's hard because some people know me. I'm a speaker. I'm a writer. I'm an actor. People will come up and be like, I saw you speak at this anti-trafficking conference. And I'm like, shh, I'm in the back row for a reason. I'm not speaking today, so no, not going to be. What I love is I love the small group. So this is going to sound weird and nobody's going to like this, but I don't care. So when quarantine happened and there was no big church, me and like five of my friends that went to the same service every Sunday evening, immediately on that night, we're like, we're going to keep meeting every Sunday evening, same time, but it's just going to be five of us instead of 2,000 or instead of 600, right? And we did that. We've done that the whole time for 6 months now. And I'm in love because I'm like, small group, right? Like, I love hearing someone speak and then being able to speak in response. And so I don't enjoy that about big church because it's more of a monologue and not a dialogue. So the way that I do my relationship with God and others, I don't worry about the rules. I do go to big church. I speak. You know what I mean? Like, I'm sometimes on a platform, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's okay. But it's not my favorite thing. It could be your favorite thing, but I'm not religious about it. So if I miss a Sunday, it's not ending my salvation. That's not a thing that's going to happen from not sitting in service. So what I do is I do have really very faithful daily practices of meditation, journaling. I'm like hourly in prayer. I'm every moment of my day, I'm in connection with God. There's just no disconnect for me. And then throughout the week, I have these smaller fellowships, such a dorky old word, meetings, whatever you want to call it, with my, you know, my group, it might be, and sometimes I meet new ones and they'll bring in a new person I don't know, and we're open and we talk and we say everything. There are no things that cannot be discussed. And we meet with people who are atheists. It's not all Christians in the group. There's some Christians, there's some atheists, there's maybe a Satanist coming over tonight for dinner. We are fine with that. I do not need to be in a bubble. My daily relationship with God is so clear, and I'm happy to share it with them, and I'm happy to learn about their thoughts and their feelings and where they're at and what they're experiencing. And so my practice, I guess if that's a good word, is very unique to me, to what helps me thrive and grow and feel safe, because I need to feel safe. It's been a long road. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so sounds like really it.
I really want people to feel free to go to big church, go to small church, just pray if that's all you can do today, journal. Like, just, I just think the rules are not necessarily helpful, because they feel a little judgy, right? If you are daily having a relatable experience with God and others, other humans, you're doing great. Keep doing that.
Before we talk about the book, I want to, this might be a dumb question and I'm okay with it. You said you were in the industry for 12 years on again, off again. Mm-hmm. Why go back? Why, if you were off again one time and then you went, why go back? I don't, you know, is it tough to get out? Is it that you like the money? What was it?
I would say getting out of the commercial sex trade it's one of the hardest things to do in America. Personally, it was probably in the top three hardest experiences I ever had. Mm. There's two things there. One, when you don't have work, you're like, well, I can go make a few $100 in like 5 hours tonight, and everybody wants me to do it, so I might as well, rather than like be on social services. You know what I mean? Like, you're just like, this feels more in control. I feel more in control of my money if I do this. The second thing is your identity becomes so attacked. And so people, like, I remember that I was a regular dancer in my life outside of the club. So I was hired for TV shows, films, events, because I was a trained dancer. You know, I wasn't just a stripper. So I would be at those events, and I remember being at events, and some people would recognize me from the club, and they would say things where I could hear them about, you know, like I was trash or whatever. And so when you have the voices of your community saying to you, you don't have much value, you're not worth anything, you're no good, the assumption is this is as much as I'm allowed to do. I'm not welcome elsewhere. I certainly didn't think that I was welcome with the church, especially having grown up in the church for a time and trying to return. That's kind of awkward. Mm. When I went back to church, I never spoke of it. I just assumed best keep your mouth shut, right? But then thank God for Harmony, who's on stage, like, confessing it. So I was like, oh, it's okay. I'm allowed to have like a background that differs from my true identity. So I think for me, the climb out isn't necessarily about money, although it feels like it is and looks like it is. The climb out is, if I really know who I am, that I am loved, valued, and purposed, I can't go back. So that's what happened to me that night. I realized who I was, and so I could not stand there being exploited or sold because it didn't match up with who I had discovered I actually was. And so you can't do something to someone who knows their value. So that is the deciding factor. That's the bottom line. If a woman is being split, or a man, and it's not just happening to women, or a child, it's primarily able to continue happening from a place of, this is who I was told I am, this is who I believe I am, this is my false identity. And all that I really do with the organizations I partner with, all that I really do, I mean, most of what we do is just invite survivors of exploitation and trafficking to discover who they really, really, really are and how deep their worth is. Once a human in any area of life knows that, they have power, and they will make choices according to what they know about their value. So once I knew that, I couldn't go back anymore. It's impossible for me.
So you go through all this trauma growing up, and then you get diagnosed with cancer. Was that a little bit of a moment where the wind got taken out of your sails?
Yeah, that offended me.
Yeah.
I remember thinking, like, I'm trying to go a good direction, website. Like, I tried to do it right. And you're just going to kill me. Like, I remember being like, okay, God, that's cute. But if I go back to the ACE score, the trauma test, part of their discovery and why one of the main reasons they have that test is because they discovered that survivors of trauma manifest typically severe illnesses. Common things are cancer, heart failure, all these kinds of things. And so I manifested it, which is common for a survivor of trauma. Your body just doesn't lie. And that's a whole other topic, so we don't have to get into that. But the body just, it speaks. It expresses the pain. So my body expressed it. It was time. And for me, while I do not wish anyone to be that ill for 3 years, it's frightening. It's really awkward to have to write your will when you're 30. It's not on your to-do list. But you have to do it. It has to be done. So it cleared up my not great marriage that was kind of off target. It ended it, which was bad, but also kind of good, you know. And it just brought clarity. I think it's kind of good if everyone could experience a time where they're dying, because you will straighten up. You will have clarity about what's important to you, and it alters your direction in life. It makes you a deeper person. I actually prefer who I am now. I'm just a better person. And after 3 years, no treatment that I did or worked, and I declined some treatments because they were so dangerous and damaging. But after 3 years, this is going to be such a, like, such a typical, like, salvation story, but oh well. After 3 years, I returned to church. Of 3 years being sick, I returned to church. I wanted to. I was excited about it. And I went to a conference, and I rededicated my life to Christ, because I had done that when I was 12. So this was like an adult dedication. And not to discount my childhood choice at 12. And within 60 days, I went into spontaneous remission. And the doctors at the cancer hospital were like, this is scientifically impossible. I was like, clearly not. I was like, clearly there's more for me to do. And so I was slated, you know, their little calculation was that I would not live past 2016. So I have 4 bonus years.
Yes. Right now.
So every time people ask me about my life, what are you passionate about? I'm like, I'm on target because I'm in bonus years. So, like, I cannot be wasting this. You know what I mean? So I don't want everyone to experience the, like, death sentence. But on the other hand, I'm kind of like, it's kind of good for you. It will straighten you out. It will. Every year, you know, when people do their little, you know, annual, what am I going to succeed at this year? I just think, like, this year is precious. Bonus year number 4, you know. So really remember what you're here for, what you were created to do, your storytelling, and just do it. Just show up and just do it well. So my years are so, like, powerful to me.
You had mentioned it a few times, and that's your book, From Pain to Purpose. What has the reaction been from people who've had a chance to sit down and read through it?
So I had about 100 people order an advanced copy about a year ago. They're so dedicated. Those people are just, they're so close to my heart. Who does that? Orders a book a year before. It wasn't even, like, edited properly. So they got their copies a little while ago, like 6 weeks ago, and they've been writing reviews, and they've been sending me messages. And, the messages I'm getting are astounding. Like, people will send me, like, a specific sentence, and they're like, this sentence, Jessica, it straightened me out, you know? And I'm like, well, good, because they straightened me out that year, too, when I downloaded that sentence from God, you know? So it just feels like, you know what it feels like? It feels like it's just sort of offering people a little slice of hope, like a little slice of courage, a little slice of hope for if they're just feel off target or if they've experienced extreme trauma or loss that can be really overwhelming, just a little slice of hope. And I actually wear a necklace. Are you guys familiar with the Giving Keys?
Yes, I am.
I was given one about a little over a year ago that says hope. And I really feel like that's the core of what's happening with this book. It's just a slice of hope, and then some steps that are not, you know, hokey pokey. It's really clear. I really love action steps. Like, it's nice to hear people talk about a theory, but I love when people are like, maybe try this today specifically. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. 'Cause I just really like specificity. Like, I really like, I'm a doer. If you take those personality tests, I'm a doer achiever. So, like, I like to have a goal for the day. You know what I mean? So it's written in that vein of, like, you know, these are the ideas, the feelings, the explanation of hurt, pain, loss, trauma. But what about walking in this direction? What about thinking about this? What about tangibly trying this or that or this? And the response has been overwhelming. And yet from the people who've already had the chance to read it, the 100 or so people, their words have meant so much to me. And just the people donating books, like, if you're listening to this, thank you. Oh, my word. The survivors that are going to receive those books, I just know it's going to mean the world to them. So thank you. Keep donating. Keep sending them to us. We'll get them in their hands as soon as it gets released.
From paintopurpose.org, last one for you. If you knew somebody or somebody is listening and they're dealing with some, whether it's sexual exploitation or in the sex industry, what would you say to them?
I would say you are known and seen and heard and loved. And if you need anything, you just go to my website, send me a message, and I will find someone in your area that you can reach out to, because you have a purpose. You are so specifically brought here. It means so much to me. Let me catch my breath. You are so specifically brought here. Your life is a really important purpose. And being exploited is not it. So let's see if we can get you back on target.
Jessica, we appreciate your heart. We appreciate your passion. And that you want to help out all those who are dealing with whatever that may be. And you can go to frompaintopurpose.org. You can get her book, which is available now. And thank you for taking some time and sharing your heart.
Absolutely. It was so good to meet you guys. Amazing.
I don't know if you follow her on Instagram, but you could actually see the picture of her just laying in bed after she had finished doing the interview with us.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes, this is the joys of radio, and that you don't have to dress up or, you know, be camera ready. You could just be you and hang with us.
Exactly. And super cash. Maybe that's where you're listening to the podcast.
Yeah.
Before you go to sleep or while walking or driving. So thank you for spending time with us.
Yeah. Don't forget, you can always tell a friend. You could reach out to us wherever you get your podcast. You could also reach out on all the socials. Instagram or Twitter. You can email us whymeproject@outlook.com. But make those suggestions. We would love to hear from you. Maybe there's somebody that we need to get on the podcast that we're not sure of. So that's why we need you and your help.
And then, of course, you can always head to faithstrongtoday.com to get more of our episodes.